A very good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is number 071350, Keck Garrett and Associates against Nextel Communications Incorporated. Mr. Paris.
May it please the Court, Tom Paris on behalf of Keck Garrett and Associates. I know that you've read the briefs, and I'm going to go straight to some of the arguments. This is a contract that has been partially performed. I don't believe there's a dispute about that. This is a contract which is not limited to the Falcon project, although there is quite a bit said about the Falcon project in the briefs and indeed in the district court's opinion. The facts are clear that $19,700 of this $1 million contract...
Could I just stop you for a moment, Mr. Paris? Because my understanding of the briefs was that the $145,000 bill was contested, is contested.
It is, Your Honor. I'm speaking about $19,700 worth of payments which were submitted in various invoices using this purchase order number. The district court opinion relates that, as do the briefs. And I bring that to your attention because there's quite a bit of discussion about the Falcon project. And indeed, in December of 2002, in January of 2003, when this purchase order was sent and signed, I think the expectation of the parties, and that's an important term under Delaware law, was that Keck Garrett would be undertaking the Falcon project. Now, that's not the terms of the contract, however. The face of the contract simply talks about a purchase order for doing packaging and creative work on various phone boxes. It doesn't specify during the year 2003. Now, Keck Garrett would have been happy to work on the Ostrich project or the Flamingo project. Certainly the parties expected it would be the Falcon project until May of 2003, as you see. Then someone higher up the Nextel chain decided that work would go to Chiat Day.
You know, it seems to me that you're arguing that the BPO required Nextel to assign you work and required you to complete it. And under that interpretation, if KGA had received a contract from another phone manufacturer before Nextel began assigning it work on the Falcon project, could KGA have walked away from the Falcon project without consequence?
I certainly don't think they could have. I think they would have been subject to breach just as Nextel is subject to breach in this case if they would have walked away. In fact, I think there's plenty of provisions in the backside of that contract which talk about what Nextel's remedy is for breach, including termination. Paragraph 9 speaks to various remedies which Nextel has, including termination.
Well, your theory is this is some kind of a bilateral contract. Is that right?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I think there's...
Why? How do you get that out of the terms of the document?
Well, the term
seems
which...
to me it's just unilateral. I mean, whatever work is done, it's got to be paid for. But I don't see that there's any obligation to undertake any work.
Well, Your Honor, I think if you look at the contract as a whole, and in particular, if you look at paragraph 6 and paragraph 9, 6 dealing with changes, 9 dealing with termination, it specifies under what circumstances Nextel can make those changes, a modification to the contract. It needs to be in writing. Now, Nextel could have, I believe, modified this contract, as I suggested in my brief, if they decided to use just plain yellow boxes with a phone number or a model number on the side of the box. Then I think that creative work would have taken significantly less than $1 million to do, and they could have changed the purchase order and said, you know what, this isn't going to take
too
much.
Where does the contract say we're going to give you $1 million worth of business?
On the very front, and by the way, it's the only term that the contract participants read. It says 2003 blanket for phone and accessory packaging. And so that term, understood well by the parties and not disputed, was that there was a fully expected in January of 2003, and those expectations never changed until mid-May, that Keck Garrett would be doing this Falcon project and they'd receive $1 million in compensation for doing it.
Is it an accurate characterization of your position to say that Your interpretation of the contract is that it was a guarantee that KGA was entitled to $1 million regardless of whether KGA submitted $1 million worth of invoices to Nextel. In other words, are you arguing that if KGA completed the project and its invoices totaled, say, only $600,000, that Nextel would nonetheless owe it $1 million?
I do, Your Honor, and here's why.
You do?
Yes, Your Honor, because Nextel is the one doling out the work here. If they wanted to have $1 million of work, they could certainly have assigned $1 million of work. They have. That's what my client expected. That's what the parties expected at the beginning of this, and that's what why she staffed accordingly.
So, in other words, if it was $5 worth of work, I know that sounds ridiculous.
It doesn't sound ridiculous to me, Your Honor, because, as I pointed out in my brief, if, though I don't think it was, Nextel's purpose to tie up this advertising agency so no one else could obtain their services, $1 million may be a small cost for such a assignment. Now, realistically, looking at, again, the expectations of the parties, and completely undisputed by Nextel witnesses who were involved in this case, in fact, undisputed by anyone, from January, indeed December, through May, there was an expectation that they were going to do this project, that it was going to be $1 million worth of work. Now, somebody higher up the ladder makes a change on a national basis, which affects Nextel's work on this Falcon project. It's reassigned to someone else. That doesn't mean the contract goes away. If Nextel had wanted a change to modify either an increase or decrease, they have a right to do that.
Mr. Paris, it really seems as if the invoices had to set forth the purchase order number, the item number, the description of the articles or work, the sizes, the quantities, the unit prices, the extended totals. No term in the contract seems to guarantee a minimum amount of work, and it seems as if the contract anticipates payment only as invoices are submitted for work performed. It seems to be more of a commitment to pay up to $1 million for KGA.
Of course, if that were the case, these parties would have put up to $1 million. That phrase is nowhere within, and had they wished to exercise some right that perhaps would have led them to an up to $1 million, they had a right to do it. Paragraph 6 allows for change orders. It's very specific about how that change needs to take place. A writing, which everybody admits never came in this case until actually the year had passed, there was a writing by Nextel. But their contract has a very specific way of making a change if indeed they wanted to modify this contract. Now, I don't think an elimination is a modification.
But, you know, you talk about Nextel focusing on reading out of context the small print on the back of the contract, which no contract participant relied upon. And in other places in the brief, you note that there was this small print on the back of the contract, which nobody read. But, I mean, a contract is a, you know, it has a, if it has a front and a back, isn't that the contract?
It is the contract, Your Honor, and I point that out to focus on the expectations of the parties. Both the plaintiff and the defendant's witnesses all admitted about reading the front. They knew what the front meant of that contract. In terms of the numerous tiny print which is on the back, they didn't read it. So what's the expectations? But looking again, I'm okay to read the back of that contract, because if you read paragraph 6 in context, which is where the defense, or, I'm sorry, paragraph 3, focuses their argument, which the district court relied upon, where it says it shall be paid, shall, not may be paid, but shall be paid upon the submission of a proper invoice. Proper invoice, of course, not a defined term. One has to look at the other provisions of this numerous paragraph, you know, on the back side of this. And part of those provisions deal with changes. Now, and termination. If it was necessary to have a writing to terminate this contract, why wouldn't, or to modify this contract, why wouldn't a writing be necessary to terminate this contract? I suggest to you that it is. And this contract, which is used for goods and services, it would appear countrywide or worldwide, talking about goods and services, has that provision. And so you can't simply read paragraph 3 that deals with how an invoice is going to be paid without reading the other paragraphs, because modifications can be made. And if there's a modification in the contract...
Well, your position then is all a matter of form, how you do this. You can cancel out the $1 million with a piece of paper, but you can't cancel it out any other way. Is that...
Your Honor, I don't believe that. I believe there changes could have been made.
What sense does that make? What kind of a contract is that?
Well, it allows for modifications. That's the Nextel. That's the contract that Nextel uses and drafted up here. And I'm suggesting that changes are not elimination, but changes could be made. And I'm trying to come up with a scenario.
Well, you could wipe out the whole $1 million, apparently, according to your...
Well, I think that would be an elimination, and I don't think that's a change. Here they've already started performance on the contract.
How do they do that?
I'm sorry?
How did they start performance?
There's $19,700 worth of apparently proper invoices. Quite frankly, they look greatly, you know, pretty much the same as the improper invoice that have been paid on this contract. And the parties agree that it's a binding contract. So Nextel is performing, and then as it concerns the Falcon project, they decide we're not going to perform. And that work didn't go away. The work itself was not eliminated. It was reassigned. And so in terms of a change, I'm suggesting if they wanted to assign other work to Keck Garrett and Association, that's their right to do under this contract. They didn't do that. They simply eliminated, took away the work that was to be performed. As the light's on, I would like to address the motion which I brought that is still pending before the court, and I'll just speak momentarily to say that as I read your rules under Rule 33, they very clearly say that the Rule 33 conference is to be held strictly confidential. The rule goes on to provide that any discussions are forbidden to be imparted to any judge, including district court judges. I don't think that rule could have been more clearly violated in this case. And I'm not going to say more about that because I have the transcripts before you in my motion, and you can read and decide for yourselves on that. But I'm happy to address it if you want to. With that, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Parris. We'll hear now from Ms. Hogan.
May it please the Court, Deborah Hogan on behalf of Nextel Communications. The parties have agreed throughout these proceedings that the January 2003 blanket purchase order is a binding, enforceable agreement. So the sole point of contention before the district court and on appeal is whether there's any provision of that contract that Nextel breached.
Ms. Hogan, if you could keep your voice up a little bit, it would be appreciated. Those microphones will record you very nicely, but they don't do all that much to amplify your voice.
Thank you. So the sole point of contention at the district court proceedings and on appeal is whether or not there's any provision of the contract that Nextel breached.
What's the purpose of this document? Could you tell me that? I don't understand. It doesn't seem to accomplish very much to me.
Your Honor, there are essentially two purposes of the blanket purchase order. One is for internal budgeting purposes. And Brian Lausch testified in his deposition about the internal budgeting procedures that required him to budget how much he thought the company would spend for the packaging work in the year 2003. And a blanket purchase order is issued for purposes of setting aside the appropriate funds within the company to make sure it's there to pay. In addition, the blanket purchase order documents the agreement between the parties on the terms and conditions that are going to govern any work that Keck Garrett would be asked to perform for Nextel.
You know, in your brief, you argue that Nextel did not pre-authorize any preliminary competitive research or design research on the Falcon project. But where in the BPO is such authorization required for in order for KGA to get paid on a proper invoice for completed work?
Your Honor, the blanket purchase order does not specifically state that there must be, you know, pre-authorization or a request for the work to be done. But as Judge Pallmeyer found, the plain language in paragraph 3 of the blanket purchase order states that Keck Garrett is only entitled to be paid upon submission of proper invoices for work completed and or articles delivered and accepted. And
so is it your view that it's not in the BPO, but it was the understood practice? Is that your?
No, Your no. Honor, our position is that that phrase, that Keck Garrett is to be paid only upon submission of proper invoices for work completed and or articles delivered and accepted, is unambiguous, and that there is no possible interpretation of that provision that could mean that Keck Garrett can just choose to go out and do work that was never requested or authorized by Nextel and then hand it over to Nextel and expect to be paid, especially in a situation like this where the work completed is admittedly of no value to Nextel.
Yeah, you argued that repeatedly in the briefs, that to the extent KGA did any work for Nextel pursuant to the BPA for which it hadn't been paid, such work had no value to Nextel. But where in the BPO is there a provision that Nextel can refuse to pay for work pursuant to the BPO if Nextel determines the work has no value to it? And if the work was done by KGA pursuant to the BPO, isn't Nextel required to pay for it unless Nextel can demonstrate that the work was not actually done pursuant to the BPO?
Your Honor, I think, as Judge Pallmeyer found, there's no possible interpretation of the language of proper invoice for work completed that could mean that Nextel is obligated to pay an invoice for work that was never requested and of no value.
You know, I continue to have the same question, I think pretty basically, that Judge Cudahy has, which boils down to, if the BPO didn't guarantee that Nextel would give any work to KGA and didn't guarantee that KGA would accept any assignments from Nextel and did not pre-authorize KGA to begin working on this anticipated project, what's the point of it? What is that?
Right, Your Honor. And there is the one purpose which I already discussed, the internal budgeting purpose, but there is also...
For an internal budgeting purpose, you don't have... Well, I've never been in business, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but it doesn't seem to me that you have
You know, right, Your Honor, if I may.
Something that looks like a contract to me.
Right. In this instance, there is an additional purpose, which is to document the terms and conditions that are going to govern any work that Keck Garrett is asked to perform for Nextel. And in addition, in this instance, for example, although Nextel did not pre-authorize any work on the Falcon project, and no work was ever requested of Keck Garrett or performed by Keck Garrett on the Falcon project, there was other work. The $19,700 worth of invoices mentioned by Mr. Paris was for other work unrelated to the Falcon project, and the reason for the blanket purchase order is because that $19,700 consisted of a number of discrete smaller projects, and for efficiency purposes, the parties do not want to have a new purchase order issued every time there's a new project. So they entered into this agreement to govern all projects that they may be requested to perform for Nextel.
The $19,000 has been paid.
Correct. All invoices that
not the $145,000.
Right.
Certainly not the million. Right.
Right. It is undisputed that the only two invoices for work pursuant to the blanket purchase order that have not been paid are the $1 million invoice, which was sent in May of 2006 during the pendency of this litigation.
Well, this may seem like a very naive and sort of foolish question, so if it does, oh well. What happened to this small company fair?
What happened to Keck Garrett and Associates?
Was this fair?
Was it fair?
It was fair.
Yes, Your Honor, it was fair. The blanket purchase order governs the parties' working relationship. There is no dispute about that. The language in the blanket purchase order is very clear that they are to be paid upon submission of invoices for work completed. There is no provision in there, absolutely no provision that guarantees them a minimum amount of work or a minimum amount of compensation. And those are the terms of the agreement that was entered into by both parties.
You'd worked together for 7 years, is that correct?
I think the working relationship started in approximately 1997, so 6 years, 5.5 years approximately.
It took you a while to tell them they weren't going to get the business, too, didn't it?
Your Honor, as Mr. Paris mentioned, there was a period of time where both sides anticipated that absent any significant change, that Keck Garrett would be working on the Falcon project. They had worked on a packaging project in the year 2002, and in fact, that is part of the reason why Brian Lausch budgeted $1 million for a purchase order with Keck Garrett. He did anticipate that absent any changes, Keck Garrett would be asked to work on that project. Nonetheless, Nextel was very careful in all of its communications throughout the first half of 2003 that its creative needs for the project were yet to be determined, that it had to wait for other work to be done.
When did you know of the fact that Chait Day?
I think it's Chiat Day, Your Honor.
Chiat Day. Oh, yeah, Chiat, like the man on the radio. Chiat Day was going to do this for free. When did you know this?
Your Honor, it was very shortly before the May 19th phone call.
What is shortly in your view?
Your Honor, I believe it was a week or two prior to the phone call at most. I do not recall the specific time frame. But what had happened, Your Honor, is there had been a larger process going on in the spring. Nextel's prior branding advertising agency was Mullen Advertising, and they were responsible for Nextel's brand strategy and all of that, but not responsible for the packaging work. Their national advertising agency had never been responsible for the packaging work. And in the spring of 2003, they went through an RFP process for the national advertising work, but packaging work was not included in the scope of that RFP. So it was only at the very end of that entire process, when it was down, I believe, to the final two contestants for the national advertising work, that Chiat Day offered to throw in the packaging work within the scope of their proposal. And very shortly after that, Mr. Obermeier informed Mr. Lausch, and they called Ms. Garrett.
So there were two different companies involved.
Your Honor.
So in other words, three companies all together.
Well, Your Honor, at the very end of the RFP process for the national advertising work, I believe it came down to Shiat Day and one other contestant. And then there was a final decision made after some final proposals by those two final contestants.
But then they were willing to throw in what Keck had been doing.
Shiat Day agreed to do that,
for
correct?
Free.
Correct, Your Honor.
To get the contract.
Correct, Your Honor. So it was not a situation, for example, where there had been an RFP process going on throughout the spring that included packaging work and that some information was somehow withheld from Keck Garrett. In fact, Keck Garrett was well aware of the RFP process. That information was shared with them, although it was at the time with respect to the national advertising work. And, of course, Keck Garrett has only a breach of contract claim at issue here. There was never any claim.
Well, now they have their motion for sanctions, too.
Correct, Your Honor. And I can address that, Your Honor. Obviously, we filed a motion to strike. I'm sure the panel is aware. There's a similar motion pending before the district court, which has not yet been ruled upon. This court does not have jurisdiction. The scope of the notice of appeal filed in this case is just from the January 24th ruling by Judge Pallmeyer on the summary judgment issues. So we would ask that our motion to strike be granted, given that this court does not have appellate jurisdiction over that issue at this time. I said that Keck Garrett does not have anything other than a breach of contract claim pending before this court. There was no claim for fraud or that they were somehow misled in any way. So we really are addressing just the terms of the blanket purchase order in this case, which plainly state that they are only to be paid for invoices for work completed. And the only two invoices, it is undisputed, are the $1 million invoice and the $145,000 invoice, which was submitted in August of 2005. And Keck Garrett has never even attempted to claim that the $1 million invoice somehow represents work completed. With respect to the $145,000 invoice, Keck Garrett has attempted to argue from time to time that it at least in part represents work that was completed. However, as Judge Pallmeyer found, it is undisputed in the record that any work that was done was not requested or authorized by Nextel. Ms. Garrett admitted that in her deposition. In addition, Ms. Garrett admitted that that invoice is in large part for what she calls people sitting around waiting to get work and for the insult of Nextel having terminated its relationship with Keck Garrett. So it is undisputed that the $145,000 invoice does not represent work requested by Nextel or that was actually of any value to Nextel. So there is no evidence in the record from which a reasonable fact finder could conclude that the $145,000 invoice is for work completed or articles delivered and accepted to Nextel. So Judge Pallmeyer correctly ruled, given the plain language of the contract, that summary judgment should be entered in favor of Nextel on count one. In addition, we moved for summary judgment on count two below. We moved for summary judgment on both counts. Keck Garrett never responded.
You mean the quantum merit? Is that what you're
saying? Yes, Your Honor, the quantum merit claim. But Keck Garrett has never responded to our arguments below with respect to summary judgment, as the panel is well aware. The law is very clear in this circuit that a party opposing summary judgment has the obligation to inform the trial court of any reasons, legal or factual, why summary judgment should not be granted. Keck Garrett never did so with respect to the quantum merit claim.
And absolutely bottom line, if KGA walked away and accepted a contract from a different company, a different phone provider, and you were, you know, you hadn't been dealing with Triad Day and the other company on anything, and you were just, you know, left naked, so to speak, we wouldn't be here with you as the plaintiff.
No, Your Honor, I see my time is up, but if I may answer the question, right, absolutely not. There is nothing in the blanket purchase order that required Keck Garrett to accept any particular assignment from Nextel. So we would ask that this court affirm in all respects the opinion of Judge Pallmeyer. She thoroughly and carefully dealt with every issue that was presented below and correctly ruled that summary judgment should be entered in favor of Nextel. And we would also ask that the court remand this matter to the district court for the calculation and award of attorney's fees incurred on appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hogan. Mr. Paris have? Thank you.
I'll be very brief. I think the trouble that you're having, Your Honor, is that their interpretation of the contract is simply quantum merit. And indeed, what does the contract mean if the law already provides for quantum merit? It means nothing because the law provides that, and so there's no obligation on either side. As concerns, if under the same time frame, KGA had decided to leave Nextel high and dry, we're talking about May 19th. The record reflects in July that this first set of phones was to be put out. And if KGA on May 19th would have informed Nextel, by the way, we're going to start doing business with AT&T or some other provider, and we're not going to honor this contract, Nextel would certainly have a right to sue them. And the contract is pretty clear, I think, about that, in particular in paragraph 9 in terms of what their remedies are. And so this is a binding contract. The parties dealt with it as a binding contract. They had expectations which changed in terms of what the project was, but that doesn't change the contract. That doesn't mean that they can eliminate any further involvement with this contract. Had they sought to change it and provide a lesser amount of work on some lesser project, I think it's arguable that they could have done that. Not eliminate is what they did here. As concerns motion to strike, this is your rule that I'm asking you to enforce, not the district court's rule. Thank you.
The court thanks both Mr. Paris and Ms. Hogan for their very fine presentations today, and the case will be taken under advisement.